That's the world at 1:45.
Studio production was by Emma Crowe and the editor was Molly Watson. This is BBC Radio 4. Time now for Plants, From Roots to Riches. Professor Kathy Willis, the Director of Science at the Royal Botanic Gardens Kew, takes up her story of our changing relationship with the plant kingdom.
In 1948, researchers began an ambitious project to survey and catalogue plants of an area of Africa comprising modern-day Tanzania, Kenya and Uganda. They began with high hopes of finishing quickly. The first volume was ready within 4 years, so by 1952, confidence was high.
Publication has commenced on the flora of tropical East Africa, and a number of families have been published. We estimate it will take another 15 years to complete.
The project was finally finished 60 years later. It turned out to be the largest regional flora ever assembled, covering one of the biggest and most biodiverse regions of Africa.
We wound up with 263 volumes in the end, and it occupies a metre and a half of shelf space, or a very large box.
With all due respect, you're not going to take that into the field, are you?
I know one person who does it. It's a big trunk in a big Land Rover.
Flora is Latin for flowers. Scientists also use the word as shorthand for the complete range of plants which inhabit a particular region, as in flora and fauna. And by extension, it's used as the generic name for a book in which those plants are catalogued, described and often lavishly illustrated. The best floras are both exquisite works of art and an essential reference resource for botanists and plant enthusiasts. Your flora is therefore a necessity both on your laboratory shelf and in your rucksack out in the field, although you'll need a big rucksack. Henk Bencher is the last of six editors who oversaw the flora of tropical East Africa from its origins in 1948.
There wasn't much known about the wild plants. There was no list. Nobody knew how many there were. It was very difficult to identify them. Many plants were used, but you couldn't put a proper scientific name onto them. And a flora enables you to name the species. It enables communication about wild species. Conversely, if there is no flora, you can't really communicate, and all scientific work doesn't get off base, really.
So in a sense, you're unlocking the biodiversity of the region with the flora.
You do indeed. And not only unlocking it, but you increase it as well. The flora was originally started in 52. At that time, they thought there might be as many as 7,500 species in East Africa, Uganda, Kenya and Tanzania. And in the end, it was about 12,000, and 1,500 species were described as new during the project. So we not just inventoried, but we found a lot of new things as well.
A flora is much more than simply a list of species. By accurately recording what grows where, these books can help address questions such as global patterns of diversity and the importance of particular plant families within an environment. As floras develop, they can also help us understand how species richness and composition change over time. So what's in a flora? Well, for each species, as well as an identification key, there's a wealth of information on the biology, distribution and habitat preference, as Henk Bencher showed me.
The first section includes bibliographical data.
So we've got things like K.B.1949. What does that refer to?
That was the original, the very first description of this particular species in Kew Bulletin.
Those are all the places that the original description is published.
That's correct.
The next section, I understand, a climbing or scrambling plant, younger stems covered with pale, rusty or golden hair. So that would be useful to your average botanist.
That's the botanical description, including the local variation and things like that. It gives all the measurements for all the various parts. It gives the range of, say, flower colour, fruit taste, whatever.
And then at the bottom here, we have distributional information.
Both within and outside East Africa, information on the habitat, in this case that it occurs on the edges of forest clearings and in lowland rainforest. It gives the altitude range.
So in less than a paragraph, you've got this incredible amount of information about that one species. And is it possible to give an estimation of how long it takes to do one family?
My best family ever was a single family on a Wednesday afternoon. There was only one species in that family.
What family was that?
It was Restionaceae. And the other end of the scale, I also worked on Compositae, Asteraceae, and that took me 10 years, but there were 900 species in that.
All the leading botanists have used floras. Carl Linnaeus, amongst others, used them to address questions about classification and evolution. Kew's Joseph Hooker, in the mid-19th century, produced a number of floras on the plants of Antarctica, New Zealand, Tasmania, the Himalayas and India, and used this global resource to map and describe species across continents. These insights had a powerful effect on the imagination of scientists. We might think that biodiversity is a new discipline, but the tradition of using floras in this way goes back centuries. The flora of tropical East Africa remains the biggest such project ever undertaken. It reflects the intense biodiversity of East Africa. Habitats in the region vary radically from the grasslands of the Serengeti through to the dense rainforests of Uganda and the Afro-Alpine moorlands of Kilimanjaro. The region provides a home for a staggering 4% of the world's flora, including highly distinctive local residents like the baobab tree, the Cape chestnut and the camphor bush. Around 2,500 of the species included are endemic, meaning that they are not found anywhere else. Concerns have been expressed that without protection, they face threats from human pressures. This is where the flora, especially one containing information dating back over hundreds of years, has now evolved as a valuable tool for conservation, as Ian Derbyshire, curator of African Botany at Kew, explains.
Until we know what the total species diversity in a region is, where the most diverse areas within that region are, and what are the rarest species, the most threatened species, then really how can we do conservation? We can't prioritise conservation properly. So having a documentation of all the species of a region is so important, and they are really the starting point on which you can do more practical conservation and land management work.
Quentin Luke is a botanist at the National Museum of Kenya who regularly uses volumes of the flora in the field for conservation assessment. In some ways, Luke personifies the old-fashioned no-frills plant collector ethic. When asked to assess the impact of potential mining projects on the flora of a region, he famously packs all 200 volumes of the flora of tropical East Africa in the back of his Land Rover.
The key element is being able to point to a species and say this one is known to be rare, what they call species of conservation significance. If they're actually found within the area, the footprint area or the area of impact, then they have to do something about it. In areas where floras haven't been done, you have to collect very much more, completely blind, and then you'll get back and you'll find that you actually missed the rare thing, you actually just collected a whole lot of the common stuff. But in the field, you can sort that out with their flora.
For me, one of the species that stands out when you glance through the tropical flora of East Africa is the iconic African violet, which can often be seen adding a demure splash of purple to drawing rooms and windowsills all over Europe. It got there via Kew. It was discovered in 1895 and brought to Kew, then written up and illustrated in the Curtis Botanical Magazine, leading to its popularity as a houseplant. The trade in commercially grown hybrids of this endemic species, Sant Paulia, is now thought to be worth $75 million per year. This is clearly significant, but the pretty little violet is important in other ways too. All the commercial hybrids are descendants of original species endemic to East Africa. And whilst compiling the flora, scientists noticed that in the wild, it occurs in areas displaying high levels of species richness. Conserve the violet, and you are conserving some of the most diverse ecosystems. Over the past decade, Ian Derbyshire has documented all species of African violet for the flora of tropical East Africa.
Most African violets in their pure form, discounting hybrids, most of them are purple in colour, with five petals, arranged loosely in two lips, so three lobes below and two above. And then they have these bright yellow stamens that sit prominently at the mouth of the flower. They have quite fleshy leaves and fleshy stems. And the hairs on the leaves have been very important in the classification of the group. So originally there was over 20 species of Sant Paulia recognised, and I actually reduced that to less than 10. because there's a lot of diversity within the species, small differences in hairiness and colour of the flowers, etc. It's very difficult to classify some species like this because they're becoming more fragmented, mainly because of habitat loss. So these populations are becoming isolated and perhaps diverging, and perhaps with time they will diverge further. But based upon current knowledge, I just felt we should call several of the previously recognised species just subspecies underneath the name of the original African violet, which is called Sempollia iananther. But nevertheless, even in its broadened form, iananther is still a very rare and threatened species in East Africa, and many of its former sites have sadly been lost.
In helping to strengthen particular concepts of the nature of individual species, the botanical illustration in a flora is a powerful tool. It's a craft that's barely changed since the great botanical impresario Joseph Banks first employed an artist on board the Endeavour. Remarkably, these illustrations are still done by hand to reveal proper analysis, and they conform to strict scientific style. This isn't mere sketching. Lucy Smith is a botanical artist at Kew and explains the process.
I'll begin by drawing what we call the habit of the plant. In this case, it's a piece of grass which shows you the roots, the rhizome, the stem, the leaves coming off it, and eventually the flowers coming off it. And then a close-up of where the flowers come out of the plant, a close-up of how the leaves wrap around the sheath of the grass. And then I go into the flowering details because they're really important at describing the differences between species. So I have a floret, which in grasses consists of a unit of two flowers, and the bracts that enclose them. Some of these florets are really tiny.
You are using a microscope then to look at this and draw this, is that right?
That's right, yes. That's where I absolutely have to use a microscope.
So what's the difference then between having a photograph and having a drawing? Why should we have a drawing?
Oh, that's the question that all botanical illustrators get asked. With a photograph, you're just seeing one aspect of the plant at one point in its life. That definitely will not tell you everything you need to know about that plant that makes it different from every other species. You can highlight what are the important details and take emphasis away from the unimportant details. If you're dissecting a flower, you can really show very, very clearly how those flowering parts, such as the filaments holding up the anthers, are attached to the petals.
Because in a sense, you're the person that's illustrating why this is a new species.
In very close collaboration with the botanist, but you do feel quite a great sense of responsibility. You can't make anything up. It has to be completely accurate and true to that one, or sometimes more than one, specimen.
Hand-drawn illustrations will remain an essential part of these flora projects until the digital age finds a better way of doing it, which doesn't look like happening soon. What technology can do, of course, is increase everyone's access to floras through so-called e-floras. Many e-flora projects are underway around the world, including a project at Kew to get the plants of the whole world online, of which the flora of tropical East Africa will be part.
That's where we would like to see the flora going in the future, having it in its original form, but then linked to more user-friendly resources, particularly photographs of plants. Although, interestingly, the flora of tropical East Africa, which took 60 years to write, comprises only less than 5% of the global flora. So you can see the magnitude of the task in hand. But at least this is the largest regional flora ever completed. So it's a great start for documenting African plant diversity.
Some floras cover areas defined by natural features, like a desert or mountain range. Others, political regions, like a country. E-flora or not, for all their simplicity, they will always be an essential part of an interconnected library of data about biodiversity. Unlike plants, some things never change.
And that was Professor Kathy Willis with Plants From Roots to Riches. The reader was Ian Redford, and the series is produced by Adrian Washbourne. You can delve deeper into plant science and read more about the plants featured in the series on the programme's page of our website. And now here's Sue McGregor to tell you about some of the people who've been reunited for her series here on Radio 4.
Rupert Murdoch's reborn son changed the face of British tabloid journalism. Roger Moore's Bond years transformed Ian Fleming's creation into a cornerstone of the British film industry. Peter Mandelson and friends made the British Labour Party electable in the 80s, while Foreign Secretary Lord Carrington's task was to help map out Zimbabwe's post-colonial future. All these events feature in the new series of The Reunion, and we begin with a group of people who kept a starving city alive. That's the Berlin Airlift in The Reunion, on Sunday morning at 11:15.